Good morning slash afternoon, Geordie. Welcome back. We had a little bit of a hiatus whilst you were in New South Wales prepping what we're about to talk about today, but it's nice to have a chat with you again about something very exciting that we've obviously had in the works for a couple of months now.
Yeah, good morning, good afternoon to you as well, Loz. Yeah, it was very, very cool weekend, very tough weekend in a lot of ways, but very, very rewarding and very interesting and an awesome learning experience, which is what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, that's awesome. So for anyone who maybe isn't aware or hasn't seen on socials, one of our TFD athletes, Toby Steele, just completed an ultramarathon 240 kilometers from the east coast of Australia up to Australia's tallest peak, Mount Kosciuszko. So I've been working with Toby probably, I'd say maybe 8 weeks or 9 weeks before this event. I can't remember now, time goes way too fast, but obviously trying to dial in his nutrition and work up towards this. And then Geordie and our TFD slash train aid photographer expert Billy, we're down there crewing in for this race. So I guess a bit about what we're going to talk about today is obviously what went right, but mostly focusing on some of the mistakes that Geordie witnessed during this event in other athletes, and ultimately just things that can go wrong or things to consider in ultra endurance events such as this coast to Cozzy race.
Yeah, to give you guys a bit of a context, with this race, Coast to Cozzy is one of Australia's longest races. And something I didn't really wrap my head around before I went down, and I definitely realized it while I was out there pacing doing it, is by far one of Australia's toughest ones. And the terrain is just ridiculous. And there are probably things that we didn't take into consideration too much when we were planning the nutrition, just because we didn't realize how brutal this course was. And when we talk about a 240K race, that in itself is extremely impressive. But then when you're out there on the course, it is literally just going uphill, which makes a lot of sense that you're going from the coast to the highest point of Australia. The whole course is just uphill. And that's no exaggeration. There was very few times where we had long standing flats. You probably out of the, say, 40 hours that it took Toby, and Loz is going to talk to Toby later on in the week, but out of 40 hours, I would say over three quarters of that was probably spent going uphill. And that's not an exaggeration. And that's with the last 65 kilometers all going uphill and the last 20 of those 65 going up the top of Mount Kosciuszko. So I guess we had a big grand plan for our nutrition and you kind of had to adjust on the fly. And Loz and Toby are going to talk about that. But I think Toby was in a really interesting position because I feel like he was probably one of the only guys that worked with a dietitian. I think that kind of stood out. Maybe I was just a bit biased when I was out there and running with him, but Toby did really well and he was one of the only guys that charged the whole way through and didn't have any stomach problems, didn't have any cramps. He didn't really break his pace. We didn't have a time where we went slower than our slowest pace that we wanted to keep. He was able to consistently keep that pace, no stomach issues, wasn't throwing up, didn't get any cramping. Didn't get like any diarrhea or any, explosive anything. That's very, very common in these events. His urine was never a concerning color when we looked at it and go like, oh God, like we need to really get on top of that. When it came to a nutrition sense, Toby absolutely nailed it. Like he absolutely crushed his nutrition, which was really cool. I just think it was an interesting perspective from me as a performance dietitian because these are Australia's best runners essentially in this race. And don't get me wrong, when you're talking about an ultra endurance race this big, there's a lot more to it than just the running. There's so much mental grit and determination that goes through just to get into this. But as we always say, you need to be able to fuel that mental push. You need to have the energy in your body for when your mind says, I need you to push, I need you to do this, that it can physically do that. Because it will. The biggest mistake a lot of runners make, especially in these ultra events, is that their mind will be saying, go, 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 but their body just will not have the gas in the tank.
And I think as well, we have a really unique perspective on this because not only did we work with the athlete closely leading up to the event, but you were there, every step of the way throughout the whole process before, during, and after. So it's really given us a huge insight and also, opened our eyes to all the things that can go right, all the things that can go wrong, and all the things that in future we definitely need to incorporate and plan for as well. So I think it's awesome that, obviously it would be cool if we could be there to support every athlete that we work with. But you by you being there and witnessing it firsthand, it's gonna, just be super interesting to see, what your retell of the story was.
Yeah, so I want to go over probably four things that I saw that were pretty unanimous amongst the people that struggled. Not everyone struggled. Like there were some seriously impressive athletes out. Even the guys that did struggle were seriously impressive because they just pushed through it. There was a case of one athlete I think I spoke to him afterwards and he spewed for about 40 kilometers straight. Like he described it as violent spewing for 40 kilometers, which is hours and hours and hours. And then he had stomach upsets for twice that time. So a few things that I noticed, I guess, straight off the bat. The first one was just hydration. And I always bang on about hydration and how important it is, especially when we're talking about these longer events. I think when we're talking about short running events, you're probably not going to just physically be out there and going for long enough where you're going to put yourself in a position where dehydration is going to be that detrimental. When you're out there for almost 2 days straight, that's a real problem you need to squash early on. And I guess one of the first and biggest things that I saw was the athletes just not having enough fluid on board at one time. And it was understandable in a sense because of the setup of how Costa Cozzi works. So unlike traditional ultra events where you're running 10, 20 Ks to CPs, like checkpoints, and then refueling and then going on your way or whatever, because this was just so long what they had to do. And I quite like this system. They had a leapfrog system where you get in a car, you drive 5 kilometers, you park the car, and then the runner runs past. And if they need anything, if they need refills, if they need to get gels or whatever, you just hand it to them and then they keep going. And then you leapfrog ahead of them, drive another 5Ks and stop. The reality is that you can just kind of drive however far you want. The officials and the directors aren't that strict on it. We kind of went anywhere from 3 to 6Ks, depending on how Toby was feeling or when I was with him, like what I thought was a better distance for him to keep the momentum going and whatnot. But one of the things that we realized, and someone even pulled up next to us and they said, hey, you don't need to be wearing your pack, your hydration vest, because you can just pick up fluids every 5Ks from your team. And I remember thinking, why would we do that? Like 5 kilometers at this pace can be anywhere between 25 to 40 minutes. And when we thought about this in the middle of the day, like the range of temperature when we were out at Costa Cozzi went from 28 degrees in direct sunlight beaming off the bitumen and then going into, you know, kind of really muggy trails, forest trails that were really hot in a sweaty environment, all the way down to about 4 to 6 degrees Celsius at night, which is freezing cold. So you went from an environment where you were losing heaps of sweat to losing not much sweat at all. And during those day periods when we were running those 5Ks, you were losing so much fluid, like so much fluid. And that was one of the first mistakes that I saw as the day progressed. I saw a lot of athletes really struggling as they went on. And it was obvious because they were just holding one 500 mil Salomon flask and probably topping that up every 5Ks. And that probably wasn't enough, even though that would have probably worked out to be about a liter per hour, which is pretty standard for most endurance athletes. Something we did with Toby straight away, we recognized this is way too hot. You're sweating way too much. We need to double that. We need to double that. And we were getting in closer to 1.5 to 2 liters, which pretty closely matched his sweat rate. And we were watching that on his urine and making sure he wasn't overhydrating. But just because it was so hot, we had to do that and we had to increase that. And that was the first big mistake that I think I saw. And I saw how that caught up with people, particularly towards the end of the day as the day carried on.
Yeah, no, I think hydration is obviously, we talk about it all the time, but even I remember before the race when Toby and I were talking about it, you know, is there anything you're kind of concerned about? He was worried that if it was going to be cold, you know, not being thirsty or not wanting to get that water in. And, you know, we really emphasize the importance of trying to stay on top of it as early as you can. So it's great that you were there to, you know, also adjust on the fly and make sure that from the get-go, if anything needed adjusting, you know, that you were there and had the supplies to do so. And I think, you know, it's all great and well to go in with a plan, and having a plan is definitely the best way to go. But there's also flexibility in that plan. And if conditions change, you can't always predict the temperature, can't predict the weather. You know, especially if, say, for example, it was like an ultra endurance cycle event or something and you dropped a bottle off the bike and that was long gone, you need to have backup supplies where you can. And if you have the resources and you have the capacity on a pack or in your hands to hold extra water, to hold extra nutrition, you're going to be so much better off always having more than you think you will need than having not enough, because you know that's going to do so much more damage than obviously not just not being prepared at all.
Yeah, and I think that point of, you know, not really wanting to drink a lot, especially in a race like that, Toby did that really well. And I think a few athletes that I spoke to after or during the race were struggling with that, just keeping up with the demands. They were a bit like, oh, I feel a bit full in my stomachs, you know, and obviously you train that throughout your prep period. But a very experienced triathlete who competes in Kona once said to me, He said, well, when it comes to hydration, you just have to suck the eggs and get on with it. You don't really have a say in the matter, which is so true. Like, if you don't do it, you will bonk out. You will bonk out. It will catch up with you eventually, especially if you're in those hot environments. So you do kind of just have to accept that, okay, if I have to get this amount of fluid in, it may be a bit uncomfortable. Hopefully you train that before you got there. But if you do have to bump it up, then you kind of have to just accept it.
Yep. And I think you know, male athletes are always a bit luckier as well. It's probably easier to stop every so often to go to the bathroom if you are overhydrated, so to speak. But no, okay, that's a good one. Hydration, I think, is definitely a priority and one of the biggest kind of mistakes you saw. So what was another thing that you noticed from other athletes?
So the second biggest thing that really stood out, and I saw this probably with, I'd say, four or five athletes as me and Toby were running past. And it was interesting because I was pacing him for pretty much half the event. So I got to see how all these other athletes progressed. And, you know, some were going really hard at the start and really well. And then, you know, they hit these periods where they bonked. And I'm not saying like this is, they all still finished. They're still incredibly, incredibly, incredibly impressive. I just often think, well, maybe with a few tweaks, they could have avoided these, you know, down periods. You're always going to have down periods, but maybe you could have avoided it. And one of them that I thought was pretty consistent was seeing this Lucozade bottle. It popped up with a lot of athletes. And I even messaged our team chat and I said, hey, look at this Lucozade. Like, look how many carbs. And we had a discussion about this very thing the night before. And I probably gave Loz a bit of a heart attack because she thought I was going to give it to Toby. But essentially, when you're drinking carbohydrates in an endurance event or any event, really, we want to get a carbohydrate drink that has a certain percentage of carbohydrate relative to the amount of fluid that is in that drink. And the reason we want to do that is because the mechanics of how our stomach works. So when we drink fluid, it goes down our esophagus into our stomach. We have something called gastric emptying, which is a fancy way of saying being released from the stomach into the intestine, because that's where most of this stuff gets absorbed and sent to our blood and does all the good stuff in our body. So the speed at which that fluid releases out of our stomach is actually quite important, because that's going to dictate how fast that carbohydrate comes through as an energy source. It's going to dictate how much fluid comes through and can go rehydrate the body. So when we talk about sports drinks, things like Gatorade, Maximus, things like that, that are specifically designed to get, fluid, but mostly that carbohydrate, they're about 6 to 7% concentrated, which means like roughly, and you know, Maximus is a good example of this, about 1,000 mils of fluid, they'll get you about 70 grams of carbohydrate. So it's a 7% solution. So that's going to go through not super quick, but quick enough that it's going to get there. And probably every 20 to 30 minutes, you're going to get that through your stomach and get those good carbohydrates into your blood. And you're going to get that good little energy hit. When we talk about other drinks that people commonly have, they usually have, say, electrolyte formulas or, you know, oral rehydration solutions. Those drinks are generally lower. They're lower in carbohydrate, only about 2 to 3%. And the reason they do that is because the higher the carbohydrate percentage, the slower it goes through. So when you reduce it, you're getting that fluid through really fast. You're not getting as many carbs, but you're rapidly getting that fluid back in. So that's kind of the trade-off. And then, so it becomes this interesting game of, okay, do I want to get the fluid in fast? Do I want to get the carbohydrates in? Or do I want to just pile in carbs and just accept that it'll go through the system really slow? And where you generally want to land is kind of in the middle and kind of swapping between them. And we like to, a lot of those really good drinks that you'll see a lot of endurance athletes use are kind of in the middle. They have a good amount of carbs, a good amount of electrolytes. They won't go through rapidly quick, but they won't go through super slow. So they're kind of in the middle, and, you know, sports drinks like Maximus's and even Coca-Cola, which is about 10%, is pretty good because it'll still go through a bit slow, but you get a lot of carbs from it. What I saw with this Lucozade is that lots of athletes obviously read that it had heaps of carbohydrates in it, and it's only in a 300 ml bottle, but the concentration is about 18%. So what that means is that you put that in, and then you're running and you're moving around. And remember, when you're running and moving around, the blood's going to your muscles anyway. It's going away from your digestion, away from your stomach. So that's slowing it anyway. Then you've got this really thick, slow 18% solution trying to come through. And it just causes a whole heap of gastric problems. And I saw that constantly. I even saw this with a guy that we were running. Originally, we were running behind, and then we got ahead of, because this happened, because I saw him smashing this Lucozade at one of his stops, and then probably an hour or two later, which kind of works out with the timeline where some of that would have passed through, he was just buckled down and he was really, really struggling. And then unfortunately, his team member was giving him the Lucozade again because they must have thought that he was having drops in his sugar. And then he ended up getting going. He had another crash back on and probably another hour or so we saw him. So it was a good 4 or 5 hour stretch. And then after that, when I saw him again, he wasn't drinking the Lucozade. So I think they put two and two together and got rid of it. So that was something that I saw. And I think a few people did that. I remember running past Cruz and seeing the Lucozade coming out and being like, oh, I really hope
red flag.
Yeah, if they're using it, they're just sipping on it. And it's not that you'd see these guys chug it back and, or maybe they dilute it down so it wasn't as high a percentage with the water, that you could do that by just increasing it, the total fluid consumption. So putting that 300 mil in a 600 mil bottle would half the consumption, the carbohydrate concentration. But yeah, that was a bad one. That was kind of consistent, not with only a few of them, but it was something that was pretty obvious that I was noticing.
No, I think that's such a good observation as well. And yeah, I know we always joke around, you know, in our group work chat and everything. When I saw that message come through, I'm thinking, okay, so at what point do I need to respect my boss but tell him to please not give that to our athlete? Or is he just having a joke here? Because I saw that and I was thinking, okay, we always say every single time, don't try anything new on race day. I was like, Jordy, what are you doing? But yeah, obviously, I would have trusted your judgment if you had given it to him, but glad you didn't, because as we've just mentioned, as you've just highlighted, that extreme, you know, kind of that rich concentration, even though it's a perfect example really of more isn't necessarily always a good thing. You know, too much can be a bad thing. And good point at the end though, if Lucozade is something that you love the taste of it, you think it works for you, you can change the concentration, you know, add it into a bigger flask with extra water. If you do, you know, if you're listening to this and you think, oh yeah, actually I've had Lucozade before and then got really bad stomach cramps, with everything, you know, you can always dilute or increase the concentration of things to suit you, but you also need to do that within reason. And after what you just explained, Jordy, in terms of that ideal concentration is something to consider, because I've seen on Instagram, you know, some dietitians or people like with a recipe of a homemade kind of sports drink, and you know, it's something to be considered of. If you are making your own concentration, you do need to think, okay, well, you know, the ones that are already made in the store are made to that concentration for a reason. So it's when you're just going to try and pick and choose different types of drinks, it is something that not a lot of people realize, but that's what we're here for, I suppose, to highlight these types of issues and bring attention to the matter.
Yeah, I'll throw Billy under the bus because he was actually bought all those Lucozades because he's a big fan.
I don't think
he was going to be running, and I told him, I said, pal, if you're actually going to run out on pace, you need to ditch those Lucozades. And I think he didn't listen to me for one stint, and then he obviously felt the stomach pain and then ditched it after that because we came home with a few of them in the back. But anyway, the next thing that I saw, and again, this only happened, I think, two people. I only saw two people, which again makes sense for a group of elite runners that do this, was cramping. And cramping can be a hugely debilitating issue. It's kind of one of those things in science where we don't really know what's going on. But as an athlete, you generally know what brings it on, even though we might not be able to say, oh, it's exactly like a neuromuscular fatigue issue, or it's an issue of your electrolyte imbalance. We don't quite know in terms of a science thing, but as an athlete, you generally know what brings on cramps and what does and does not. I would say that conditioning could be a factor in this, just purely because we were taken back by what the course was. If you've done the course before, obviously you'd know how to train for it better. With Toby, me and him spoke about this, like, oh my God, this course is way different than the way we interpreted the gradient map and everything else. So purely just the immense amount of uphill and the amount that you had to use your calves and your hamstrings and whatnot, that could be a factor that you just didn't condition properly in training for that. However, what I thought was a big issue, and probably was for the people who were experiencing it, not so much at the end of the race, but more towards the middle, it seemed that it was a case that during those hot periods during the day, they didn't seem to replace the fluid and salt adequately. And that seemed to be, when I was talking to these people, that seemed to be the case. They were a bit more dehydrated. They didn't get back on top of their hydration. They didn't put the right amount of salt back in. They just kind of followed their generic plan, thinking that they were sweating X amount when really they were sweating Y amount. And then because they didn't catch up and they're in that deficit, and they just kept sweating and sweating and sweating, they went deeper and deeper into a deficit. Then ultimately, they just hit a point where their body started cramping up. And I saw a few of them where they had to take extended breaks, where they just had to orally get on top of that fluid. They had to physically put salt in by way of both electrolyte supplements and salting their foods. But that, again, it was only a couple of athletes, but that was a big issue, right? And I think something's important to, we'll talk about this next, is that it was the heat during the day, right? When you're sweating a lot, that was a big thing. This wasn't really that big of a consideration at night when it was cool, but it was something you had to get out early on, because you had to get on top of it, because we started the race at 5:30, and then you had the whole first day, which was direct sunlight. It was meant to be a cloudy day. There was not a single cloud in the sky, and it was just beaming hot sun. And I think that took a lot of people by surprise. And unfortunately for a couple, led to some pretty bad cramping.
Cramping is such a tricky one, hey, because there's the, you know, I think it's the altered neuromuscular function, and then there's the electrolyte hydration imbalance theory as well. And I think, like what you said is true in terms of athletes of that caliber, it's probably not due to a lack of conditioning, but more so that imbalance between hydration and electrolytes. But I was super pleased that Toby didn't experience any cramps on that event. And to be honest, he had mentioned he doesn't often cramp in training, which is really good, but you still, you know, I think 240 kilometers, all that incline that you ended up experiencing, it was awesome that at least he didn't. Did you get any cramps at all while you were pacing, Jordan?
No. I guess I could talk about it a bit later, but yeah, cramping is really a big issue for me when I hit a certain level of dehydration. And again, it could be neuromuscular. I think I'm pretty well conditioned, but after hanging out with those guys for a couple of days, I'm probably not as well conditioned as I think I am. But yeah, dehydration is definitely a big thing for me. And I just, again, me and Toby spoke about it, and we both kind of went on the same protocol, because we're both big salt sweaters. And I think going into that first trail, which was called Cowbell Trail, which is, if anyone has ever done Mount Coota, Kokoda in Brisbane, it's kind of like the most renowned brutal hill here that you can train on. And it was about 10 of them back to back. And it was just so ridiculous, but we just powered up it because we had to get it done and we wanted to catch up on some time. And I lost a lot of fluid then, but luckily, because I was smart about how I was replacing it and I was kind of had to set the example for Toby, we managed to both get out of that pretty well, and we avoided cramps pretty confidently. We both knew we were sweating a lot and losing a lot of salts because we could see the salts. We both had the black Solomon vest and they were just covered in salt marks. So yeah, we did pretty well staying on top on that front.
Color changing hydration packs, hey? Go from black to white, the more dehydrated you become.
That's a great idea. But that does bring, to be fair, something which I think I should have thought about a lot more. I think I just got a bit more wrapped up in the whole totality of the event, like two night sessions and two day sessions. Maybe I just didn't think about it as much, or maybe we didn't discuss it. At least it took me back a little bit. But again, we did adjust on the fly and we did this pretty well. But it is something that I feel a lot of people didn't take into consideration, which was surprising considering there was quite a few people who'd done that, you know, up to 9 times. Those guys, you know, they know what they're in for. But again, it's having different nutrition tactics for different temperature ranges throughout the day. And that may sound like, oh, you're getting a bit too specific, but when you're running for 40 hours straight and you want to run at a certain time, because there's cutoff times for these, you can't just be moseying your way through. Like, this is an elite group of runners and there's cutoff times you have to be getting through. You have to have different approaches for different times of the day. So during the daytime, like I said, it was 28 degrees, beaming hot sun. And then at night it got down to 6 degrees. I think in some parts we were in, it got down to like 4 degrees, especially when the sun was coming up. It was freezing cold. And in those forest trails, when you're running up and down, it's extremely muggy. You're losing an incredible amount of fluid. I think my first 2 hour stint, I lost nearly 4 liters of fluid. And that was just for two. But then I went out for a nighttime run. I went out for eight hours or something and lost only three liters of fluid in 8 hours. So drastically different how much we were sweating. So I think what we ended up doing, and I'm not too sure if people really followed suit because we saw these issues with cramping and, you know, some people really getting these low energies. And again, that just comes back to the entirety of the event. You're up for past 24 hours. You're going to be tired. You've been working hard. But different strategies that we used were, say, at nighttime, we knew we weren't going to be sweating as much. We put less focus on the fluid and sodium. Okay, this is a good time. We can bank up these carbohydrates for later on in the race. Let's bank these carbohydrates. So whenever we were doing our stops every five, we were adding an additional, say, 30 grams of carbs every time. Hey, grab this handful of, you know, red frogs or this sandwich or this, and have this on top of your gel, and then really banking them up. And I think that played big dividends when it came to the time the next day when the sun came up and we had this big incline where you don't want to be eating because it's so hot. You're bordering that overheating phase because the sun is just beaming on you. You're focusing so much on getting fluid in. So you're putting so much fluid in your stomach and you're feeling full and not too great. And it's salty, so it's not like particularly palatable. And you don't really feel like eating anything. But luckily, because you were smart and the night before, you banked up those carbohydrates, you had enough energy that you can get away with reducing that overall carbohydrate during that period. So I think that was what I noticed as well when we were coming up that second day. I don't think a lot of people took the opportunity to bank up carbohydrates during that part. And we could see that, like, we really saw a lot of people bonk down and we were overtaking quite a lot of people in that last hill coming up. And I think that was a big reason why, is because they didn't back up these carbohydrates. And when the heat changed, they were trying to just run with the same nutrition strategy, but obviously they couldn't because they were experiencing all these other things. The blood was going to their muscles, digestion wasn't working as fast. So they had to sacrifice something, and that was getting in those carbohydrates, which ultimately leads to less energy levels.
That's super interesting. Hey, and of course, you know, a typical marathon or maybe just a 50K ultra, you're probably not going to be running day, night. So taking into account now, okay, changes in temperature, changes in sweat rate is super important for anyone, you know, after they've done an event, reflecting on what went well, what didn't well. And again, using this as an experience to make sure that next time all of these things are taken into consideration, because there's so many different factors in ultra endurance sport, you know, as you've just discussed on this call, all of these different factors. But again, it's just great that you were there to help Toby adapt on the fly. And obviously, you know, you were in it as well. So not only looking after Toby, but looking after yourself as well and the whole crew. So it was definitely a huge feat, but such awesome learnings that have come out of this event.
Yeah, really, really glad that we did that. You know, obviously it was awesome to see Toby crush that and get that race done. That was very, very rewarding. But again, very interesting to see that elite level group of runners. And they're seeing some simple things, you know, it gives me a lot of confidence, right? Like, there's probably a lot of good that can be done if someone really takes that ultra running nutrition space by the horns and really directs people. So I'm very, very excited to put some more info out there. I'm already talking to a lot of the people that were in the race and connecting with them, and I'm sure you'll connect with them as well, Loz. But very, very interesting. And if you are an ultra runner and you're listening to this, or you're an endurance runner, and there's other things that you notice, that are these little niche things that we might have said or you're thinking of, shoot us a message, let us know. Or even if you want to discuss them, I'd love to talk to you about it, because again, we can read all the books in the world. We can read all the books and all the papers, and they really don't mean that much until you get out there and do it. That's when you really start understanding these things. So we would love to hear from you, and we'd love to hear if you had anything you want to add to this discussion.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you are listening, you know where to find us, where to message us. But yeah, I'm excited to get into this. And also maybe I'll have to crew you next year for Costa Cozzi, Geordie.
Yeah, I said to Toby, let's not say those two words for another couple of weeks, then we'll talk about what the game plan is for next year.
Yeah, I think poor Toby's probably got a little bit of PTSD from that event, but it was an awesome event, and I'm so glad to have been a part of it. And Geordie, your commitment obviously on the actual race was awesome. So yeah, I look forward to speaking to Toby later on in the week to hear his point of view and his, you know, recount of the event. But as a spectator and as the chief nutrition and hydration expert, it was really fun. And Geordie, super grateful that you were there to adapt on the fly and to make, you know, everything go as smooth as possible. Obviously the course wasn't smooth, it was very much uphill, but everything else seemed to have gone as smooth as possible. So as long as you're all good, he's all good, that recovery is probably going to take a little while.
Yeah, that's it. All right, Loz, we'll chat next time.
Thank you.
And there it is, another episode of the TFD Performance Podcast. We have had such a great response to our TFD Performance Hub, and we have just dropped our brand new course, Mobility for BJJ with Dr. Kickass. Dr. Kickass is one of the world leaders when it comes to BJJ performance, and this course has been made using the science of kin stretch, which helps BJJ athletes not only become stronger on the mats, but injury-proof their joints. This is truly a game changer for all BJJ athletes at every level of competition. If you want to start injury-proofing your body, then head to the link in the show notes and purchase our Mobility for BJJ course.